I was born in Jackson County, Arkansas in 1894. And I can remember our hardships of our, especially our school days. We had to walk 2 miles to school, and it was awfully hot in summer and awfully cold in winter. A little tots just starting school. And in the wintertime, the farmers would cut down those big trees to go across those creeks that we had to cross to get over to the schoolhouse. And it'd be iced over so much of the time, lots of ice and snow. And we couldn't walk them, so we'd get down and crawl across them. And they'd call it cooning them, cooning the logs. So we made it across. And we had just a one room and one teacher school building that went to everybody in one room. And, of course, it was pretty bad, I'm sure, on a teacher to go through all of that with everybody in the same room, everybody listening to everybody. But that's the way it was.
How much education did the teacher have? How much school did he have?
I really don't know. But not anything like it is now. They just get maybe just a high school diploma. I don't really know. Not any college degrees. And, of course, that was more than most of us got then. But, that's the way we got it, the hard way. And then our farming was another hard life. We had to farm with a one room and a turning plow. And plow the same row, one row, go down on one side and come back on the other. And then that leaves just a little narrow row right in the top, and we could go along and chop it and chop the weeds and thin the cotton out and make the crop that way with just that one mule and one plow. And make the crop. We didn't know what insects were. We never bothered with anything like that. And seeing that we always had generous rainfall and made reasonable crops, and we'd get, I'd say, $50 a bale for our cotton. And we'd grow our potatoes and the vegetables, and we had fruit, we had apples and peaches.
Was this still in Arkansas?
Yeah, Arkansas. We lived there until I was 8 years old. I lost my father. And when I was about seven, we moved away from there to Limestone County. When I was eight, Limestone County in Texas. And we had it a little easier then because it was better weather and better living conditions for us. Not so cold and not so hot. But we still had to work. Our farming had improved a little bit. We had the cultivators with two mules got up to where we could have better conditions about our farming. But we still had everything. We grew everything to eat. And the school got up to where we had the school there had two rooms. They called it the big room and the little room. When we passed the third or fourth grade or somewhere along there, we'd go into the big room, they call it. We'd separate them there.
You just have one teacher? I guess you had two teachers.
Had two teachers. But starting out all in the beginning there was just that one room and one teacher. But got up to that where we had two teachers, two rooms. And, of course, the teachers then, of course, the requirements wasn't nothing like it is now, I'm sure. I can't remember about that, but anyway.
Were teachers men or women?
Men. All men. I don't remember going to a woman teacher until I was 14 or 15 years old, with all men teachers. There just wasn't many women teachers in those days there. And we kept going along, and then, like I said, we'd put up our vegetables and fruit and stuff. We'd bank up the potatoes, sweet potatoes, and turnips, and apples. We'd bank them up in mounds and hills of dirt, and then keep through the winter. And we could go dig them out of that dirt and be just as fresh and nice as, fresh off of the tree.
We just had them buried
in the dirt. And you'd have no idea how nice they would keep in there.
All winter?
You'd keep all the winter, but keep them from freezing. Bury them deep enough, you see, in there, and they wouldn't freeze. and they kept us as fresh and didn't lose a bit of them that way. And then we canned all the stuff that we grew in their gardens, all other vegetables, and had milk and butter. And we had hogs and chickens, eggs. We didn't buy anything except flour and coffee and sugar. And we'd go to mill even, take our corn to the, they had the mills to grind the corn, make up our corn meal. And I can remember so well how that was my brother's job. He'd go every Saturday evening and take a load of corn on an old mill. He'd go to the mill with the corn and get it ground up into the mill. And that lasted us a week or two. And go back another time with another load of corn. So we got along just fine that way. And then I moved when I married in 1922, moved to South Texas in Jim Wells County, six miles from Alice, out on a ranch. And we lived out there 3 years. And it was just some farming and ranching, mostly ranching out there. And no pavement of any kind, just deep mud roads. And all the transportation we had was in a wagon to go in to get groceries. And sometimes you'd have to put four mules to a wagon to get in to get groceries. The roads would be slammed.
Could you still grow? You couldn't grow vegetables down
here. Not as much here, not as well here as we did up there.
What could you grow?
Well, this was heavier black land down here. That was more of a sandy loam soil up there.
Like you couldn't grow any fruit?
Not much fruit down here. We had all kinds of fruit vegetables.
What did you plant?
Here?
Yeah,
down here. It was grain, sorghum, cotton, and corn. And we had some vegetables, but they didn't do as
just
well.
Just maybe some little beans. And
beans and peas. We always had a garden and grow stuff like that, but nothing like it was up the country there.
Couldn't grow the sweet potatoes and the peanuts.
No.
Nothing like that.
Not this black land. It doesn't grow stuff like that. We have to get back in the sandy country to do that. But there was ranching days were pretty hard days. It was, especially on the granddaddy. He was the one that did the riding and the roping all the time and doctoring the calves. Screwworms was a problem then. That was what they had to fight every day. And, of course, there came a time then that they thought they had that all licked. So we hear that the trouble is back again pretty bad. But there's always some problems of some kind. But then we lived there 3 years on the ranch, and we moved to Bishop. And we lived out on the farm there, moved out there in 1925. And that heavy black land, of course, we didn't have the vegetables and fruit and stuff we'd always been used to, like we had up the country. We missed that so much. We didn't have that. We still had our chickens and cows and eggs and everything like that.
I guess you bought more groceries in town.
Yeah, we had to buy more stuff then. But I sold eggs. I sold enough eggs and butter to pay for our groceries, because we always had a surplus, and there was always a sale for it at the grocery store, and we'd sell that in exchange for groceries, paid for it. We was never indebted to the grocery. We'd come out ahead nearly every week with running eggs, and we'd trade in for other groceries, coffee and other things that we had to have. We come in.
This is when you was living out here?
Yeah, living out here. He's out on the farm out there.
Had he bought that ranch over there in Alice, or when y'all lived there? Or?
No, that was up in Duval County.
Well, who did buy that?
That was Uncle Albert, Granddaddy's brother.
He,
the Magnolia Ranch. That was her brother's granddaddy. And the Aunt Rowan, his wife, still owns that ranch. It's called Magnolia Ranch. And but when long years ago, when they bought the Duval Ranch, well, that was in the bandit days, way back there in 1920.
Who who was that bought it? They go in on it together?
Yes.
The
Richardson brothers. And they were sold, well, it was about 2,700 acres, more or less, in the ranch. And it was just brush country. And they never did, the youngest son, Travis, did. He lived on it a few years, lived out there, and they had cattle, some cattle. But I don't think about most when your granddaddy was staying out there by himself a few months. Well, they had to come into town for the birth of their first son, Travis and Bonnie. And granddaddy was living out there alone, and the bandits would come through there right close to the, well, on the Johnny Ranch from theirs. It was called the Gibson Ranch. It joined the Richardson Ranch. And these bandits, they had a regular trail. They're pack mules.
What were they, bootleggers?
Bootleggers. They'd come through there, those pack mules loaded down with pots and pans and tequila and just their camping stuff. And they just cut the fences anywhere they came down and crossed anywhere they wanted to go. They didn't stay on the highways or places where they could be seen. They just cut out across the ranches there and just... But anyway, they'd camp there not far from where granddaddy was living. And this Gibson Ranch joined there, and he heard that they were camped over there. And this Captain Wright was in charge of the Rangers at that time. I know history tells you a lot about Captain Wright, and he knew him personally. And these bandits, well, they camped there, and he heard about that they were there. Well, of course, they didn't try to do anything because they knew they had to get along with them or something worse would happen. And this young man of Gibson's son, in his early 20s, was riding the fence on their ranch, not knowing the bandits were camped there. And he rode up on them, and they killed him. He had a good horse and saddle, and they just took him off his horse or had him get off and start walking. They just shot him down and took his horse and saddle. And they broke camp then and started on traveling. And the Rangers was kind of in touch with them. You see, they knew about where they were going, where they were headed. And that night, when they settled down for a campsite several miles away from there, after they'd killed the Gibson boy, you see. And by the campfire, well, it was a bad, bad cold night. It was raining and cold. But they got in there, the Rangers raided them. Some of the bandits were asleep, and some were sitting up watching. And they could see them by the campfire, see the light of the campfire. And these Rangers slipped in there, and they could see them through the brush. And they thought they recognized a certain one that some of the bunch of the Rangers thought they knew, some of them for sure. And they shot into them, and they killed one for sure, and they injured some of the others. And they carried this dead man into San Diego, there to the courthouse. And your granddaddy and my brother, Uncle Willie Davis, they went to San Diego the next day. They heard about it. And they went over there and saw him. They had him there at the courthouse, lying there. And the rest of them, some of them was crippled up, but they got away, but they got one of them. And that broke that bunch up for quite a while. And that was, I think, the beginning of the breaking up of all of that bandit trouble, so much of it. I don't think it was ever so bad anymore after that, after they really got in on them there, those Rangers, running them out of the country there. And but it was pretty trying times for the ones that lived out there in it, because you never knew when they were going to show up, and if they'd take what they wanted. And if they'd go right into your house, those ranchers there, and they'd order their women folks to cook them something to eat or whatever they wanted, well, they'd take it. It was pretty bad.
Yeah, I guess the houses were just so far apart. They're so far
apart. Oh, yeah, like a ranch country out there. There wasn't any houses. They're just miles and miles apart. And not hardly any telephones, no communication. The word didn't get around very fast. Yes. So there's a lot of history back there, but a lot of things that we didn't know about.
So he was just out there about just a few months.
Just a few months. He was out there something like 4 to 6 months, something like that. While they had to stay in town a while. And the baby was born. Travis's baby was born, and they went back to the ranch. They were living out there, and the granddaddy went back into Alice. They were farming there. But Travis stayed on. They lived on the ranch out there.
What year was that? That was
1920. And then we married in 1922. But that was before we married that he stayed out there, and what a terrible time it was. He was riding the range all the time and having to do his own cooking and living by himself. It was pretty rough.
How many head of cattle were they running in there?
Well, I don't know. I imagine maybe 200 or 300 head, something like that. I don't know for sure. But they couldn't run too many on just the natural range, you see. They hadn't seeded any of it and grassed it down like they have now. A lot of ranches have seeded, even that ranch. It's changed hands, and he's seeded worlds of it. A lot of acres is in that good grass now. It carries so many more cattle now than it did back. That was just the natural range. And but that was his life, that ranch, and that's what he dearly loved and still does. But the doctor's day way back there, I hadn't told you that about how I had to go horseback way back there when they didn't have, there wasn't any cars then when I could remember back there about that. It was so hard to get a doctor, maybe 2 or 3 days before the doctor could get to you. You'd just have to go horseback all over the country, just whatever he was called. And maybe when he'd come in, he'd be exhausted and he'd attend to the patient and go to bed. He'd just go to bed and sleep, rest a while. Maybe take up then on his next call. He just had a list of them. He just go on down the line. And when he got to it, then he had a buggy. That was a big improvement. He had a buggy to go in where he could kind of keep himself warm and more comfortable than going on horseback all the time. But the country doctors, the way they do then, well, they really cared for the people, took care of their patients the best they could. Of course, they couldn't do much about it, but they did all they possibly could. But that's the way they traveled, on the horseback and in a buggy. And before they got the Model T cars, when we moved over to this Nueces County, here, Bishop, in 25, we bought our first Model T car. We moved over here. And I said, oh, it's just like we're just married. Started out with that new car. We'd never had anything like that before.
Was there many people around here that hadn't yet?
No, wasn't many cars in.
Most of the people just still?
Still going in wagons and buggies and horseback. But after we had our car.
Well, did they have that? This road out to there, is that...
No paving, nothing, no sand, nothing. All just deep mud roads.
That was in 1925?
Uh-huh. And we lived in that house way back off the road. Didn't even have any cleats or anything. And we'd try to get out of there. And we'd all, at Christmas time, we'd all try to get out to go to the parents' home at Christmas time. And the farmers would help each other get out, and there was mud holes, you know, they'd congregate there and pull them through, push them through, and get through those mud holes, and get everybody moving. They know all those bad places. But then, as time went on, we saw the pavement the roads being built.
When did they first pave this road out east of Bishop, going out there?
Out east there. Well, that must have been in, it must have been 35 or something like that. It was after we moved in, into town.
What about when they had the first paved road in between here and Kingsville?
Well, it must have been something long about that time. I can't remember about that, but there wasn't any paving at all in the country when we first started out.
But it wasn't until the 30s?
No. And how bad the roads would get, and how they'd have to put four mules to a wagon to get to just the front part of the wagon, just the two wheels. They'd uncouple it, you know, from the back and just go with two wheels into town, four horses to get what supplies you had to have. It'd be so bad to take the whole wagon, you know, just they'd be that bigger load to pull. And they'd get a box full of groceries. And I remember once out there, they had a little store finally sprung up out there on the farm. And your granddaddy would ride a horse over there and take a cotton sack and get some groceries.
That's up the other side of the
tree. Up there at the other side of the gin out there. It was the Gerald store, the Gerald farm. Jack Gerald was running the little store. And he'd take a cotton sack and go up there and get some groceries and put in each end of that sack, put it across his horse, you know, divide his groceries and put them on either side of it. And when he couldn't go in the wagon or any other way, he'd just go horseback. And
how many horses did y'all keep out there?
They had usually just two, and sometimes he'd have a spare three, because you never know when one was going to play out.
He ran cattle out there for a little while.
Yes, we had cows, had cattle. And we did pretty good with it. Of course, it was awful cheap then. It was lots of hard work of doing it. But it was helping us.
How many acres did you have in cultivation when you first...
We had 100 acres. And we was tickled to death to get 100 acres of that good black land. And then the place, it had some pasture land, some broken land. That's where we had a few head of cattle. And that helped out about making a living, making ends meet.
When did he get his first tractor?
Well, that must have been about, I'd say 35 or 6, somewhere along there.
So he was working 100 acres with just...
With me at first.
And he had
a cultivator, had his cultivator and two mules, he plowed with that. And he finally got a second-hand tractor and got to where he could, he was getting up in Z then when he had a tractor that he could work it with such more ease than walking and plowing, or then we got a riding cultivator without an improvement for over the walking cultivator that he'd been used to doing all year. But we made it with the stuff that we would grow with our produce and everything that we could in our meat. I'd sell enough to help out on our grocery bill.
When did he get this place over here in Alice, the one that he's got now?
He got the place in Alice first.
He got that? He bought that first?
First. We bought the first 100 acres over there. And then, in the meantime, we got a lease on the place over there. When the drilling was first coming into being then, and got a pretty good little lease on the place. And it helped us make a down payment on the place over here we'd just bought. So that got us started on our feet, and we were just tickled to death, and we just...
He got pretty good, pretty much oil out of that place over there, didn't
he? Oh, yes. We finally, they brought in a well over there, and it must have been it might have been in about 37 or 8, somewhere along in there. got in a pretty good well, and it produced pretty good for 2 or 3 years. And they drilled several good wells right around it there, still producing. And there's, it's been under lease most of the time until the last 4 or 5 years now. It, and so has a place here in Nueces County. But it's been a big help when you can lease that way, and we've made pretty good with that. So there's all businesses really helped out in lots of ways. But there's a big improvement today about, well, we can look back now and think about the days, the way we started out and the way it is today. Well, there's no comparison about the way the, when the children that get married now, well, they have to have everything to get started off with. When we married, started off without anything hardly, well, it's quite different. But that's the way it goes. Times change, and well, we've been mighty fortunate. We've had a long life together. We've been married 51 years. Your granddaddy was 85 years old on the 23rd of October, and I will be 80 on the 21st of next February, 74. And we've been pretty healthful and blessed with good health and good luck. So we've made it.